Okay, we'll call the State Government Finance Committee to order at 4:39 today. The clerk will note the roll. We are one short of a quorum right now. We've had some members check in and check out. We have bills up in other committees. For those of you in the room, you notice one change. Bob Shipman is the new committee administrator. He used to be the researcher for the committee and got a wonderful promotion here to be committee administrator. We certainly welcome him to the committee. The rest of anything you want to say? Or
Glad to be here, and I've covered this committee for 11 years, so I can help you folks know.
He's been here longer than 11 years is longer than the two of you put together, right?
That's right.
So it's experience. And Mr. Shepherd is back as our research analyst. You've been with the committee how long, Mark?
About 15 years or so, Mr. Chair, with this committee.
With this committee, okay. But longer with the House, right? Okay. And Helen Roberts is our fiscal analyst. You've been here for
9 years.
Okay, same as me. And Dan Listig is our new legislative assistant for the committee. Dan, do you want to say anything?
Nope, glad to be here. Been here a couple months, so glad to get working on the work.
Okay, wonderful. And then the committee members are the same as last time, so we're not going to go around the table and do all that. So why don't we move right into the Department of Administration. We have the capital budget request for 2006. And were we going to go over the Ford report before or after or not at all today? We had it on the agenda, but it's not imperative that we do it today.
I think that's what I heard, Jared.
Okay.
We'd start off with this. And
wonderful.
Jim Rhodes is here, so we need him on.
Okay. Jim, would you mind if we do the Ford report at the next hearing? Okay. Wonderful. We just, I'd like to have a little more attendance for the committee, and being that we have a lot of bills up, this is not our ordinary meeting time, as members know. I just wanted to note to people that we do have the State Government Finance Committee members and contacts in the packet for you to look at. And we'd ask for you to keep the Ford report in the packet, members, and for the page or the committee assistant or the administrator, whoever cleans out our packets, please keep the Ford report in the packet for next time. And good afternoon. We'll introduce ourselves and move on with the presentation.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Nikki Giancola. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Facilities in the Department of Administration. And here today to go over our 2006 capital bonding plan with you. The underlying theme for our department continues to be to take care of what we own and manage, but it's also taking a look ahead to better provide for the occupants of our buildings and to take advantage of opportunities wherever we can to save cash. For this budget cycle, projects were ranked based on the following priorities. Number one, facilities where significant life safety or code concerns exist. Secondly, facilities that the state currently owns that are in compelling need of repair and maintenance. Next, projects where there might be long-term economic advantages to the state by increasing ownership of office space through either construction or purchase. And finally, requests that support admin strategic plan. As a result of that, admin has again placed the repair of the exterior facade of the Department of Transportation building as its highest priority. The condition of the system that anchors the 1,200-pound panels, the granite panels, continues to deteriorate, and left unrepaired, they will eventually fall. That request is for $10.2 million. Next is for CAPRA, Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Account. And that would be funding in recognition of our department's responsibility to assist agencies statewide with their emergency repairs and their unanticipated abatement needs.
Ms. Giancola, will you be covering these in a little more detail as we move forward? Or?
Mr. Chair, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
You're just doing the overview on that. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Continue.
Next is our asset preservation. This funding is requested for completion of only the most critical repair and replacement items for the 22 buildings that are managed by administration. That request is for $6.2 million. Admin's backlog of needed facility repairs and replacement currently exceeds $100 million. Per Minnesota Statute 16A.11, Subdivision 6, this is something that requires that unless provided otherwise by the Commissioner of Finance, the combined amount of operating funds and capital funds to be budgeted each year for the building maintenance and betterment is 1% of the replacement value of the buildings. Our current estimated replacement value of admin-managed buildings is approximately $1.1 billion, equating to a biennial budget target of approximately $21.5 million. Asset preservation funds obviously are critically needed to maintain the buildings in the Capitol complex and to bring them up to present-day standards as in quotes. And our final request is for agency relocation. It's a standard request. This one is $200,000, and this is requested for those unanticipated moves during the biennium. It's another one that admin carries every year. So starting off with the Department of Transportation exterior, again, the system that anchors the 1,200-pound granite panels to the exterior facade continues to deteriorate. Left unrepaired, as I said, they will eventually fall. Admin made the initial request to fund this project in the 2002 capital bonding session, and subsequent requests were made in 2004 and 2005. And many of you will probably recall us talking about this last year, but just in general, what's going on here is rust has developed on the steel support system behind the panels, causing expansion, which is literally lifting and moving those panels up and out of place. Confirmation of this movement is evident in damage to the sills and in cracked and spalling panels. Monitoring the facade, which is including twice a month site visits by an engineering firm, continues during the winter months. The latest monitoring report, which covered the 2005 winter season, not this current one, we don't have a current report yet fully, indicates that the south elevation is in the worst condition, and I want to read a quote directly from this report to you. Quote, the results do not warrant immediate action. However, as stated in the previous report of August 5, 2004, without a repair to the facade, a panel failure is inevitable. The movements observed during the monitoring effort, albeit small, confirm the continuing deterioration of the facade. The winter of 2004 and 5 was particularly mild with a below average amount of precipitation. Despite this, panel movement still occurred. In our opinion, there is a correlation between the severity of the environmental conditions and the magnitude of the panel movements. Therefore, forthcoming winters that produce more severe weather will likely induce more significant panel movements, both in quantity and magnitude. Close quote. As a safety precaution, chain link fencing has been installed at key pedestrian areas around the perimeter of the building. In addition, cribbing and protective structures have been installed this year to protect the roof and mechanical equipment on the roof from damage from the spalling granite. At this point, if I may, I would like to point out something. Our visual here is a mock-up of the exterior of the building. If you can see this, what's going on here is the steel that I mentioned is rusting. And the panels, which are 6 by 6 by 3 inches and they weigh 1,200 pounds apiece, 3/4 of a ton, are sitting on top of this, held in place by a slot and a piece of three bar. This rusting, as it continues to go on, pushes the panels up. And it's not only shifting some of them out of place, but it's also causing the spalling that requires it to protect these structures over the little toughness and to protect the roof. So this is just a visual for you so that you can see the cross-section of what's behind the camera.
Anyone have a question on the DOT building before we move on to the next project? Representative DeLaForest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to refresh my memory, perhaps a question for Ms. Roberts. I see the funding source is proposed to be trunk highway bond. Am I right in my observation that that this project then would compete with, for example, funding for the local bridge account or other things potentially? I mean, are they in the same pool of money?
Ms. Roberts?
Mr. Chair, Representative DeLaForest, I believe that's correct. I will double-check with our transportation staff since I don't usually deal with trunk highway issues, but that's my understanding.
And one follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. DeLaForest, Representative DeLaForest.
Thank you. I understand this is a Department of Transportation building, but are trunk highway bonds the only available bonding source, or is there a possibility of using GO bonds for this particular request?
Ms. Giancola, do you know that?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative LaForce, I really don't know a definitive answer, but I heard in a presentation by Commissioner Ingerson a few days prior that, I mean, they were talking about the funding source, and there is a statute, it's 167.45, that does stipulate that operation and maintenance of the Department of Transportation building shall be paid out of the trunk highway fund. However, I know she fielded a question about that very thing on GO bonds, and I don't know the definitive answer to that. I think it's a finance answer.
Is that a, Mr. Shepherd or Ms. Roberts, you know, is that a may or a must that we have to do bonds out of that? I know, Mark, you've staffed the committee for a while. If you might, maybe Representative Kahn knows if the DOT building exterior, could that be funded out of GO bonds, or does it have to be trunk highway bonds?
You could fund it out of, I think you could fund it out of GO bonds, but traditionally it's always been out of DOT bonds. And did we put it in the last bonding bill? I think we said.
The statute.
Which we're allowed to say.
Mr. Chair,
I didn't hear.
The statute says shall.
Okay, shall means must, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so apparently we've ordered ourselves, but we could change the statute, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Sounds maybe something for the. Sounds like maybe some idea for the omnibus bill later on. I mean, you know, maybe we think that's a better use to spend trunk highway money on trunk highways. Do we have any other questions on the DOT exterior?
I think, you know, one of the.
Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, when you do it out of DOT funds, you don't bump up against that 3% limit. Sure. It's then out of that. So I'm sure that was one of the reasons why we put it in there.
Okay, last call on the DOT exterior. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there, we're not going to be voting on this today.
Nope, we won't be voting today, just before, hearing the overview.
Then before we do, Mr. Chair, can we get someone in to explain this a little bit more? We went through this last year, and we were, the three of us here are trying to figure out, recall our memory here, but I think if we have a thorough presentation on why it has to be this versus GO bonds. I guess the question is, $10.2 million that could be built building roads in Brown County versus the building. So we have to ask ourselves where the priority is and why it has to be one fund or the other.
Maybe someone from finance today or another day. You're from finance, right? Well, you come on down and introduce yourself for the committee. Sign in on. Do we have a sign-up sheet up there? Okay.
I'll peek at you through the granite slab, and if it fell right now, I could see you better. Excuse me, I'm Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT, so I'm not with the Department of Finance, and I am not bond counsel, so some of these questions would probably be best followed up with them, but I will give you my understanding of the situation, both historical and I think legal. And I've heard two questions to date. One is, why and does the funding source have to be trunk highway bonds for this particular project? And in this case, as is the case with all MnDOT buildings, which are owned and operated by MnDOT, they are for a trunk highway purpose, and there is specific issues around general obligations bonds being applicable to trunk highway projects. And while the projects and buildings can be a debatable point, and I think that's where I defer to Mr. Peter Salson from the Department of Finance, to date, given that this building is entirely dedicated to trunk highway operations and purposes, we have paid for that building with trunk highway bonds, as we have all buildings throughout the state. Secondly, on a related note, I believe the write-up indicates that the rent increase would go up. The issue between trunk highway and general fund bonds may be a bit of a moot point, because if it is funded by trunk highway bonds, then there shouldn't be an interest charge that's passed through to the rent. So if we're funded by general obligation bonds, the trunk highway would pay for the use of the space as well through the lease cost. So that's a secondary consideration, not directly related to the issue of is it appropriate to use trunk highway bonds or not. The other question that I heard just prior to this discussion was how does this compete with, and I believe the example is the county or local bridge project bonds. And this $10.2 million funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund does not compete against local projects. Those are, in fact, general obligation, general fund-backed bonds. And so projects such as the local bridges, the safety and rural road safety account, and any projects that aren't specifically on a trunk highway do compete and are part of the general obligation bond process. And one of the representatives did comment also that this interest charge or this would not compete against the debt ceiling established for the general obligation general fund bond package. That was an accurate statement.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question on that. You mentioned it wouldn't compete against the local bridge bonding. And I know that there's generally just all the local bridges go into one bonding thing and it's sorted out. Occasionally there's a local bridge that is a specific item on bonding. Would this compete with that kind of a specific set-aside bond?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't believe so. I think that, in fact, I just returned from the Senate Capital Investment Committee hearing, and they had quite a list of projects side-by-side aligned with the governor's recommendations. And at the bottom, they have two totals, actually. One is a grand total, but then they break out the grand total and say general fund-backed bonds and trunk highway-backed bonds and other revenue or other types of bonds. And the ceiling that they use is for the general fund. So a specific project such as, I believe, Hennepin County has put forward a specific bridge replacement. That would compete in the total limit that is decided upon by leadership of the respective houses, and I assume the governor, and would compete against that in the general fund portion. The trunk highway fund would not apply that. That said, when you add it all up to the grand total, you do have a bigger number, and so some people key in on the grand total and some people key in on the two totals.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Follow-up. Could that specific bridge be used out of trunk highway bonds?
Mr. Chair and Representative, no, it could not. Trunk highway bonds constitutionally are dedicated to a trunk highway purpose and to a trunk highway interstate or state road. Or state road functions such as a building that's, you know, designing and maintaining and housing people to bring the roads to design or construction or maintenance. So my understanding is no.
A better way of saying it is you're not taking away from local bridges because that's GO. You're taking away from state highways.
Mr. Chair, collectively need to deliver the program and need to have the fiscal infrastructure, roads and buildings to do that. So they're competing for the same money, yes.
Okay. One quick thing before I call on Representative Blaine. 167.45 says the cost of operation and maintenance of the new central office building for the Department of Transportation or so much thereof as is properly attributable to the Department of Transportation shall be paid out of the Trunk Highway Fund. It's 1955 is when that was. It's not a new building anymore, obviously, but that's the way it's written. Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious. So you said you're from the Department of Administration?
Excuse me. I'm Kevin Gray.
Oh, from
Chief Financial Officer, MnDOT.
Okay, maybe this question would be better directed to Ms. Giancola. If there is repairs to be done to the Department of Administration building, or let's say to the Department of Ag building, does that come out of the department's budget then? Because in essence, we're taking money out of operating money out of the Department of Transportation's budget to fix the building. For projects, and I'm just curious if we have that precedent for other agencies if we If we would take money from the Department of Administration's budget to use to put new windows in the DOA building.
Ms. Giancola?
Mr. Chair and Representative Blank, administration actually has 20 buildings that are under its custodial control and an additional two that we manage. So we say we manage 22 buildings. The projects that we're putting forward here, other than the Department of Transportation building, which has this specific language with it, we're talking about general obligation bonds to fund those projects. I'm not quite certain if that was your question, but that's the process for us.
Okay, well, we got any
I'll let it go.
Mr. Chair, if I might, Dana Badgerow, Commissioner. I believe the question Representative Blaine was asking has to do with how do we pay for these repairs? How does an agency pay for them on an ongoing basis? Well, what happens is that the bond debt, the interest payments, go into the operating costs for that building. So the cost of the improvements, in fact, then is amortized into the rent that is charged to that agency. And so depending on the period of amortization and depending on the life of the asset, you could take a roof for 20 years. You would amortize the cost of that roof over 20 years, both the principal and interest, and they would have an increased rental charge that they pay to the Department of Administration as the landlord for that particular building. So to take your example, if we were to do an improvement in Department of Administration, my rent would go up for the use of that building.
Thank you. Okay. We'll move on with statewide CAPRA. I believe is your next slide.
Yeah. CAPRA, just a reminder, is a capital asset preservation and replacement account. It's the statewide fund centrally managed by administration for all state agencies. CAPRA funding provides rapid financial assistance to agencies for emergencies and unanticipated abatement needs. This keeps agency funds available for ongoing operations, and it helps mitigate additional damage. $5 million is requested in this cycle to support these emergency repairs and unanticipated hazardous material abatement needs. I think it's important to note that agencies individually request dollars for their planned asset preservation projects, and CAPRA funds are set aside for emergencies and these unanticipated abatement needs. Projects for the current CAPRA request obviously then are unknown. The amount that we're requesting is based on historical spending as well as our anticipated needs. The funds are used until they're exhausted, and then it falls back on the agencies to fund these emergencies.
Could I ask what, and I'm just looking over the budget sheet right now, last year we had a bonding bill, did we allocate a certain amount for CAPRA, and how much would that have been, and how much of that is gone?
Mr. Chair, $3 million was allocated to administration last time, and I had a... In $4.3 million booked in calendar year 2004 for this account, approximately $1 million booked in calendar year 2005. Of this $3 million appropriated in 2005, which, by the way, simply replenished the fund because it was at zero because we had no bonding bill in 2004.
Right.
Approximately $1.3 million has been spent.
There's $1.7 left.
Okay. Sorry, correction. $1.8 has booked. We have $1.2 remaining.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on the CAPRA request? Okay, next slide.
Next up is asset preservation. A total of $6.2 million is requested this cycle. Almost $5.9 is in general obligation bonds. Approximately $330,000 is general fund associated with relocation expenses on one of the projects. Life safety and code compliance, again, were prioritized to the top. And this request is for completion of only the most critical repair and replacement items for the 22 buildings that administration manages. We were allocated $2.5 million to this account in the 05 cycle. The first project that I'd like to talk through is the Minnesota History Center roof. This roof was installed in the 1990-1991 timeframe, and it is at the end of its useful life. It is what we call a single membrane ballasted roof, which does have a life expectancy of between 15 and 18 years. I would like to...
This is part of the asset preservation.
This is part of the asset preservation request. I would like to run a video. It's approximately 3 minutes long. I think this says it best. This was one of the requests that we had last time as well. We continue to make repairs, and the issues that we're dealing with on this roof are, the roof is it's complex. It's many levels and elevations and covers many small areas. It's got a lot of flashing, and the membrane is shrinking. We've experienced tears and actual holes. We've experienced leaks, and we have spent approximately $94,000 in the last 5 years on repairs to the roof. But I would just like to play this video for you.
It's February 3rd. I'm on the north side of the History Center, Building C, and this is the parapet wall directly above the C gallery. We have some failure of the parapet wall where the membrane is attached to the wall. You can see from the upper corner detail that it's coming loose and it's buckling. I'm going to attempt to kind of show how far this goes down the wall. This wall is probably about 12 feet high, and
it's playing on my screen. Sorry.
Oh. Is it on your screen?
Yeah.
We could put it up on the. Do we have good enough eyes that we all can see up? You can put it up on the table if you wanted to.
It's February 3rd. I'm on the north side of the History Center, Building C, and this is the parapet wall.
Okay, a plan C.
Take one more shot, and we can certainly listen to it, too. That's a flat roof, isn't it? History Center roof?
No,
it's not a flat roof?
Multi-layered.
It's February 3rd. I'm on the north side of the History Center, Building C, and this is the parapet wall directly above the C gallery. We have some failure of the parapet wall where the membrane is attached to the wall. You can see from the upper corner detail that it's coming loose and it's buckling. I'm going to attempt to kind of show how far this goes down the wall. This wall is probably about 12 feet high, and you can see kind of as the breeze is going how it moves. Right now I'm down about 40 foot from the corner, possibly a little further, but this whole wall is loose and moving. And if we get a leak behind this wall at any of the seams, it'll go down underneath the roof membrane and leak directly into gallery C above the artifacts. Right now they're just putting in the Eastman exhibit at the History Center. It's valued at, well, millions of dollars, I've been told. One painting alone is worth $400,000. So if we start having leaks into this space, you know, the results could be probably pretty catastrophic, and the items would be irreplaceable. I've now moved over to Building B at the History Center. This would be the northwest corner of the building. And again, I'm looking at some parapet wall that where there's been failure, where the membrane is let loose from the structure and is kind of blowing in the breeze here. I want to make note, I'll try to catch the, there's a 1D, sorry, not recording this quite right. Try to catch it here where there's a hole right through this membrane, and I'm able to stick my finger right through the membrane. So the first rain we get, this will fill up and it will go through the membrane and leak into the space below. I have no doubt of that. So we really need to get this whole thing redone. I'll try to get an air, catch the section and show you how far this goes back. This wall is probably about 30 feet, I think, long, and it's at both edges. It's come loose completely, and it goes down the entire wall. So we need to get this whole area replaced. It also takes, it goes down to the left probably another 10 feet in the other direction on the northwest corner.
It's basically a big rubber lining that's cracking apart.
Mr. Chair, it is a rubber roof. There is ballast or rock on top of it. But what we were trying to show in that video, and it shows it so well, and I'm sorry that it didn't play, but there are high parapet walls on History Center roof, and there are many elevations and areas to the roof. The parapet membrane, as it runs up the parapet, is pulled loose in many places, and that is what was described as flapping in the breeze. And it literally is in many places up there. It should be adhered, and we continue to repair those seams as they tear open. And I do want to point out that the hole that was described and the tear that you probably couldn't see very well were repaired shortly thereafter, so those are fixed. But basically it is at the end of its useful life, the membrane is shrinking, pulling away, and causing tears, and we continue to repair on an as-needed basis, but it really needs replacement. The next project is, this again was a request from last year, is the Capitol South entrance. This is the public landing. Hopefully you can see on either your handouts or behind me the area that we're talking about. It's the first landing after you come out of the south doors, walk down the steps. It's the landing that goes around there. The entire landing bed is deteriorated, and a number of steps have settled out of level. And what we would be doing here is redesigning, re-engineering, and reconstructing this public entrance. The other projects in our asset preservation request are the Centennial air handler replacement. This again was a request from last cycle. This would be the final phase of the Centennial Building's air handler replacement. The main air handlers were replaced in 2002, and this would complete the project by replacing the perimeter induction exhaust units and fans and other smaller units. It would result in improved efficiency, air quality, and air distribution in that building. The next project, another one that was a holdover from last cycle, is the Administration Building Asbestos Abatement and Renovation Project, $2.4 million request. Just so that you know, asbestos is present in the fireproofing, the insulation, and the floor tile. The first floor and small areas of the third floor in the basement are yet to be done. It would include much-needed repairs and rebalancing of the mechanical system, and the net result would ensure proper, even, and consistent distribution of the heating and cooling in that building. The next request under asset preservation is for the governor's residence. It's a safety upgrade of a fire alarm system. The system in the governor's residence is 25 years old, and it's a mix of battery-operated and hardwired alarms. The point I'd like to make here is, should a battery-operated alarm go off in an area that is either not heard by the on-site personnel, or if it would go off when the residence is unoccupied, a fire could get quite advanced before any notification would come in on it. So what we're requesting here is a hardwired fire alarm system for the residents. And I guess I'd just like to point out there, we are aware a number of years ago of a fire in the governor's residence in Utah, and the First Lady and I think a child were actually present during that time. It was a Christmas tree fire. But similar kind of a dated system. The Kearns Mansion, as it's referred to, has been completely renovated. But we really feel, for safety, this one needs to happen now. The last couple of projects under the asset preservation request is for the State Office Building exterior step stabilization and repair. The steps on the east side of the State Office Building have substructural deterioration that prevents proper ceiling maintenance and drainage, and it continues to worsen as water seeps under the stairs. It's trapped, and then it freezes. The work would be to stabilize the structure and then reset the steps.
Is that the steps out that lead to the Capitol, or is that all around the building?
It's on the east side, so yes, it would be the stairs leading to the Capitol.
That is good. They'll spend $500,000 just on taking the steps off and...
Mr. Chair, it's the substructural work that is really the costly element here. It's redoing what they're sitting on and then resetting the stone.
Okay. It's kind of expensive for... maybe it's more work than what I'm thinking, that that's above what I'm used to dealing with. I always think in things in terms of you could build a six-bedroom, three-car garage mansion in Marshall, Minnesota for $400,000, so it costs more than that just to reset steps. I get nervous, but if you're going to do more work underneath, then that makes sense, I guess. Okay, and then the other question I had on agency relocation, was there two separate ones on that?
Mr. Chair, the agency relocation associated with the administration project in asset preservation is...
That's the 330?
Yeah, okay. That is 330.
The one on the back page for 200 is a different
project, right? It is different,
right?
Yes, okay. Mr. Chair. Final project under asset preservation is a request for the State Office Building for an elevator renovation. This would be to upgrade and renovate the riser and freight elevators to meet code, prevent failures, and just provide more efficient operations in the building.
Okay, any questions on that portion? From the roof to the steps to anything, freight elevator, whatever? Okay, and what's your wrap-up is on the
wrap
last
up
relocation?
Is, Mr. Chair, the agency relocation. Just to recap, agency relocation fund is used to fund major agency relocations in the capital budget, and our real estate management division is responsible for developing and crafting the request on behalf of interested agencies. $200,000 from the general fund is requested for these unanticipated moves of state operations, and it can be either temporary or permanent moves. Examples would be if a landlord doesn't renew an agency's lease at its expiration, if a facility is sold unexpectedly, if an agency needs to reduce its space, or an unanticipated reorganization, such as could be drive-related, drive taxes-related, or remodeling needs to be implemented.
Do we know any right now that are thinking or leases coming up?
Mr. Chair, we are not aware of any on the horizon right now. Agency relocation items include move costs, telecom and data, furniture and equipment move, and rent differential.
Okay, any questions on that last part? Or are you all finished up?
Yes, okay. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Concerns or whatnot? Okay. I think what we're going to do, is this the entire admin request that we know of right now? We're not requesting anything in terms of the Ford building right now?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are there, in terms of the Capitol building, is that the CAP board will be presenting that, or? Who's done that in the past, the Capitol building, Ms. Roberts?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, the request, it came through the CAP board. The governor's recommendations at this time don't include anything for the Capitol renovation.
Okay, I have a number of committee members very interested in the Capitol renovation, so I think someone's here, and I think next week. Okay, we're going to try to get all of our bonding next week if we can have two good hearings. I think Representative Bradley and the others who have special projects will be one day, and we're going to have the CAP board. Ms. Roberts-Holmes is there. The CAP board, amateur sports, military affairs.
Mr. Chair, I can hand this out to members. It's a spreadsheet that has the requests on. The request before the committee, the Capitol Area Architecture Board has the request for the Capitol renovation. Military Affairs has four requests. And then at this time, there have been four bills introduced that have been referred to this committee. Representative Kahn's Star Base Minnesota bill, Representative Bradley's National Volleyball Phase 2, Representative Fritz's land acquisition for the Faribault Armory, and then Representative Ellison has a bill for the National Sports Center track resurfacing.
Okay. Representative Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question, and I should have probably got your attention earlier. I apologize. In regards to just like the one of the last slides you put up there with the stairs and the steps, I believe it was. Will you come up with those figures on what it's going to cost? Just walk me through it really quick on where you get the numbers for that.
How do we get estimates, Ms. Giancola? Just, is it preliminary estimates from agency people, preliminary bidding?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a combination. Much of it is preliminary pricing. That is true. Some of the projects have had actual proposals given on them. Some are high-level estimates. It's really a combination. And if you're interested in each project that we're presenting now, I could provide you that information. On whether it was a competitive quote or high-level estimate.
Ms. Giancola, something I've always wondered, you know, maybe the bonding committee needs to look at this more closely, but if a contractor knows that something has been appropriated $500,000, wouldn't they kind of be incentivized to bid up around that area or knowing that the money is available for it?
Mr. Chair, I suppose in a lot of ways that would be true, but I think our staff that's doing the estimating between the State Architect's Office and Plant Management have a very good handle on not only the scope but the cost of the work. They've done some of this work before. They don't just come up with a number. They do look at the scope in detail, and particularly the State Architect's Office helps in that cost estimating piece of it.
A related question to that might be, is anyone allowed to bid on these projects if we have a cement company who does tuck work and so forth in Marshall, Minnesota, or do they have to be union contractors who fit all these various quotas and requirements and whatever bureaucratic requirements there are? You know, this isn't the bonding committee per se, but I've always kind of wondered, since it's state government finance, could just anyone from Little Falls, New Ulm, or Marshall, if they are fully equipped to handle a job, come in and bid on something, which probably could do it at a reasonable price, or is it generally going to be a Twin Cities contractor because they're all unionized? Do you happen to know that off the top of your head?
Mr. Chair, I believe, and I've got someone here from the State Architect's Office that could probably explain that process a little better than I, but the the contracting process for this work is taken off of. There are procurement procedures. Most firms that are interested in work show up on our what we call master roster, the master contracts. And maybe Kath here could explain it a little bit. She deals with it every day.
Ms. Olska, go ahead and introduce yourself, and you have a good history with this, too.
Good afternoon. My name is Kath Olska. I'm assistant, assistant director with the State Architect's Office. What we do is it's a public bid. Anybody can bid, and we really actually encourage members, anybody, if they know some of the things qualified to bid the work, please come forward and bid the work. There are a few cases, such as in roofing, where we would say that there needs to be a track record, so we want to have a couple years of experience. But we work very closely with materials management to make sure that when we do have specific things, that they're reasonable and that we aren't being excluding good contractors.
Other questions relating to that? Representatives?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Department Administration has someone on staff that has the construction background. I'm just trying to walk this through in my head. I apologize. Going back to the stairs again, and I probably don't need to waste committee time on this, but I'm just, since you're here and it's brought up, I want to ask. The stairs, as an example, X amount of dollars or the steps or whatever it was. I mean, is there someone from the department that says, all right, this is, 15 feet of steps, we're going to need metal bracing to support it, we're going to need so many cubic feet of cement, we're going to need the groundwork underneath, so much fill, so much gravel. I mean, do you have someone on staff that has the expertise in the construction field to do that? And I'm not quite, it's an honest question. I guess I'm not calling anybody out. I just really want to know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, what we do is we do estimates. We don't do line item quantity estimates. We don't get that detailed with the project. And frankly, I don't know what the scope of work is until we hire a designer to actually design how many feet of bracing and fill, et cetera, that are needed. I know in the case of the east stairs of the state office building, there is occupied space underneath, which does contribute to the cost of that particular project. But what we do is as Ms. Giancola said, we have a variety of ways of looking at it. In the case of some of the stairs, we have a long track record of having done work on a lot of different landings. So we've got an idea of what we think it would cost. So that's where we put together the estimates. And sometimes we actually do talk to cost estimating firms to get some idea of what it would be. Then when we put the estimates into the capital budget request, that is not necessarily what the final cost is going to be down to the penny because we publicly bid it. So just because someone has an idea of what the scope of the project and we think it's X amount of dollars, if they want to submit their bid with that in, it's a competitive bid. So they need to, if they really want the job, they need to sharpen their pencils and submit the lowest bid because the lowest qualified bid is, our bidder is going to get the work.
One question I had relating to something I previously had asked about, is the prevailing wage laws in the Little Davis-Bacon, is that requirement of all state projects as well?
Mr. Chairman, yes it is.
Okay. So that anybody can bid, but you'd have to live within those guidelines, basically.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. All right. That was your question? Okay. Representative Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final, and this is, I probably know the answer, but how often do the bids come, I mean, how often do we sign the bids under the projected cost that you come out with, kind of what Chairman Seifert said about, you know, if it's a $4 million project and a contractor knows that, they're going to bid close to that, even though they maybe can do the work for 3.5, and I suppose that's where the competitive bid comes in, but just a rough comment on how often you see bids coming in underneath the number, the target.
Mr. Chairman, our representative, first of all of our bids that we would go forward with would come in at or under the project dollars because we have no ability to award a contract without that money. And typically a project goes through a number of phases. We go through this initial piece here. We then go through schematic design, so we have our designers do a rough draft. We have them price that to make sure it's within our budget before we allow them to move to the finer details of the design. The next stage is design development. We do the same, get more details known, so we have a better idea of how many widgets we've got in this project. We then get pricing at that stage. And then we have a final set of pricing when they do the construction documents, which is actually how many screws and pieces of sheetrock that go into the building. So all the way along, we do a good evaluation of price based on what we see in the market. And all of our projects do come in. Some of them come in a little lower than others, but we're generally in the range that we've estimated.
Ms. Halska, if we would, let's just think out loud. If we budgeted $1 million for some particular project for a building, let's say, or $10 million, and it came in a little bit under, and the appropriation through the bonding bill was $10 million, and the bonding or the bid came in at a total of 9.3, where does that $700,000 in savings go? Does it cancel back? Does the agency keep it? Or maybe it's something you don't know, and I need to go ask Representative Dorman's staff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, any unspent money goes back to the fund that it came from, so it'll be returned. As an example, the Anderson Building, Human Services Building, that while it was built with Port Authority funds, we followed all state principles on that, and we actually are returning $10 million on that project.
Okay, so does that go back to the GO fund, or it just goes back to...
It goes, Mr. Chairman, it goes back to the fund that it came from. So in this case, it goes back. I probably didn't use a good example there. We're just trying to show you that money goes back. So in some cases, when we get done with the project, there's unspent funds, then they return back to the bond fund or Department of Finance. I don't know, Ms. Roberts, maybe we can...
Ms. Roberts, where did the $10 million go that we saved from the Freeman Building? Or Anderson Building. Is it Anderson or Freeman?
Mr. Chairman, this particular one was the Anderson Building.
The Anderson Building. Ms. Roberts, where did the $10 million go from the Anderson Building that we saved,
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure because we're actually purchasing that building on a lease purchase agreement. So, I don't know. I'd have to...
Could you find that out?
Yeah.
Okay. Would it be fun to know?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious then if...
How many other projects are there, and where did that money go to?
Well, so then you're saying then if it costs $10.2 million to fix the granite slabs on the side of the DOT building over there, and if we get it bid and completed for 9.5, then the $700,000.
Let's say the trunk highway fund.
Would go back to the trunk highway
right.
fund. That would
that's
be the
easy one.
That's an easy analogy.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. And the
okay.
same thing is true with this particular fund. It goes back into that bond fund.
Okay. We may have somebody who has an answer for that. I didn't know that we saved $10 million on the Anderson Building. Are you from the Department of Finance? Oh, come on up. We'd love to know where that $10 million went. The Port Authority? I hope not.
It's saved for the DOT building.
Oh, okay,
so I'm,
introduce yourself,
yeah.
please. And
Peggy Luxo with the Department of Finance.
Okay. Do you understand the question?
Yes, I
okay.
did. I'm the budget officer for
okay.
the Department of Admin. My understanding is when a project is bonded, and in this case the Anderson Building, the savings would go to retire a portion of the bonds. So ultimately it would lower the lease payments on that building. Because the remaining debt service would go into to finance the or to
so over the 20-year period the amortization would be lowered for
would be
bond
lowered.
Payments.
So they'd go ahead and retire some of those bonds
and that would
and
be the
overall
case.
Debt service.
That'd be the case basically for any of these GO projects. If you have something where there's $11 million and the bid end up being $10 million, that extra $1 million is amortized over. And your payment to the bonds over those 20 years, this is a little lower, is what you're saying.
Yes, that's my understanding. Now, I believe in the case of the asset preservation, the pool of funds, it would just go back to the pool of funds for other asset preservation projects within that department.
Okay.
So to whatever asset
yeah.
preservation
CAPRA
department.
Or asset preservation. HEPRA
right.
with MNSCU, probably
right.
the same.
They would, those funds would just go back into that asset preservation. So they do more of their projects ultimately. Or
okay. Now, we have certain requirements. I know we're getting a little into where we're turning into the Capital Investment Committee, but just hang with me for a second. We have a requirement in terms of if we have certain strings attached to appropriations that they have to have a private match or whatever, or, and then they don't meet that requirement, isn't there a cancellation statute that after so many years, if they don't come up with their match or if the requirement isn't met, that that cancels and goes back?
Yes, I believe that's true, and I believe it's 4 to 5 years, and I think periodically there's an extension of the four-year period.
All right, Representative Krenke, used to chair bonding.
3 years.
We've moved it up, didn't we?
Oh, for the, okay, I can correct it.
For GO projects.
For the match.
Okay.
Yeah, I can correct it.
Okay.
3 years, Mr. Chairman, and if we can cancel them sooner, the better.
So we move it to 2? I don't think a good amendment to the omnibus take up on finance, though. Does anyone else have a question, as long as we have the experts here, that you always something you were wondering about? Yeah, very good. What we're going to do, committee, then, is we would like to have the CAP board. We'd like to have you up next week. We would also like to hear from amateur sports, military affairs, veterans affairs, between the 2 days next week, we'd like to wrap up with bonding, and then any members who have special bills, and I think you said there were 4. 4 special bills for members, which would be Ellison, Bradley, Hahn, Fritz. Okay, so we'll get those 4 people in here to sell their wares, and then we will be done, and I think we'll get our recommendations or lack thereof off the next week. We'll be done with bonding.
I like the lack thereof.
We'll be finished up. And does anyone else have anything for the good of the cause?
Mr. Chairman, just while we're talking about schedules, I believe Representative Dean has the performance pay. Is that coming to this committee? Since it does have an impact on
it has a fiscal impact. Do we have possession of that? It's in GovOps right now. Assuming it survives there, I'm going to request it. And then I think we send it to Ways and Means then, right from here, unless there's someone that thinks it needs to go to another committee. And my plan right now would be bonding's done next week. So if anybody, I'm going to send the word out with members, if you have some special bill that you've got for our committee, you better get it in quick.
Well, I think I might have a few amendments for Representative Dean's legislation. So.
Okay, we'll be happy to accept those. And members, we're going to do the same as last year. We'll be flexible on amendments. Just try to give us a heads up as soon as possible. Try to have them in writing. If you don't, Mark will do his best to whip up something quickly for us. We want to be real open to that. I'm trying to think of Representative Dean's bill. We have some bills. Well, we have a nonprofit reform bill that was referred here, I believe, Mr. Shepherd, last year, right? That one that I think we have possession of that, then, don't we? Okay. What happens if it moves to GovOps to here? Then we just keep it? Okay, so we have my nonprofit reform bill, and I have some amendments to fix that up a little bit. So we'll have that up one day. And then Representative De La Forest has the state contracts referred to us this morning. We'll get to them at some point and try to get our mini omnibus bill assembled and finished by the end of the month. And then we may have some hearings on oversight of certain things or whatnot. The Ford report, by the way, Mr. Rhodes, if you want to do that next week for 15 minutes or so? 10? Okay. So we'll do the Ford report, and then...
The Ford report, is that Ford Motor Company?
Ford Motor Company building.
They're moving into their old building? They're downsizing?
Well, they might be at some point. They could, you know. But I think, you know, we'll try to wrap up by the end of the month with any bills that we're going to have. We're going to be running against deadlines anyway. Anything else? We're going to try to stick within our regular committee time. If we have to go into evenings, we're preferably not going to do that. So this is one I didn't want to do today, but we just need to get started. So, okay, meeting adjourned.